Imagine a massive tech monopoly just willingly sending an internal memo that essentially says, hey, we're charging our customers way too much money.
Right. It sounds completely made up.
Yeah, it sounds like a parallel universe. I mean, it goes against the entire playbook of the last decade, you know, the whole strategy where they just lock you into an ecosystem and then
Slowly boil the frog.
exactly, slowly boil the frog with these annual price hikes. But last night, Microsoft actually did exactly that.
It is a complete inversion of their standard operating procedure.
Right.
We are looking at a stack of sources from the Tech and Game newsletter today, Tuesday, April 14th, 2026. And the overarching theme here is, well, it's panic mixed with this sudden drastic need to adapt.
Yeah, the era of limitless growth and like blind brand loyalty seems to have hit a very, very hard ceiling.
It really has.
So we're going to cut through the daily noise and look at the underlying mechanisms driving this today on our deep dive. We're dissecting massive pivots from Microsoft and Roblox, exploring the wildly divergent hardware philosophies of Apple and Oppo, and looking at how Asus and a highly anticipated release from Capcom are proving that consumer choice is, you know, suddenly the most valuable currency in tech.
Let's start with that leaked internal Microsoft memo to The Verge. It comes from Asha Sharma.
Right, the new head of Microsoft Gaming.
Yeah, she recently stepped in to replace Phil Spencer, and the phrasing she uses is just stark. She literally writes that Xbox Game Pass is too expensive for players and demands a better value equation.
I read that and immediately thought of the unbundling of cable TV back in the late 2010s.
Oh, that's a good comparison.
Right. Because for years, the Game Pass model operated like this massive all-you-can-eat buffet or, you know, a bloated cable package. Back in 2020, they charged $15 a month.
And you get everything for that.
Exactly, you get everything. But to sustain the cost of acquiring these massive studios and putting huge AAA titles on the service on day one, they had to just keep raising the entry fee. Today, the ultimate tier is $30 a month.
Which is wild when you think about it.
It's a 100% increase from 2020 and a 50% jump just since last October.
And that October 2025 price hike is exactly where the math finally stopped working.
Yeah.
The internal data that leaked alongside the memo, it shows a severe retention crisis. Players have been actively canceling their subscriptions for 6 straight months now.
6 months of churn.
Right. And when you analyze the broader economics of game licensing, it becomes clear why. Microsoft took on the massive financial burden of producing top-tier software. But to offset those development costs, they had to push the financial burden onto the user.
And at $30 a month, the user finally pushed back. Especially when you look around and see PlayStation Plus Premium sitting at $18 a month, or Nintendo Switch Online with the expansion pack at $50 for a whole year. I mean, Microsoft basically priced themselves out of their own competitive advantage.
Which is what forces this pivot from their old philosophy of, growth at all costs to what Sharma is calling sustainable value.
Sustainable value. Okay. So what does that actually look like for the user?
Well, the leak details a structural pricing reform slated for the end of 2026. We're likely looking at the introduction of a $15 light tier with restricted access, and then a $40 family tier covering 5 users.
Okay, so they're finally unbundling the buffet. If you only want to play indie games, you pay the $15.
Right.
And if you want the massive day one releases, you figure out a family plan to split the cost.
It's a necessary capitulation.
Yeah.
They realized you can't simply acquire users anymore.
Yeah.
You have to actively retain their financial trust.
Financial trust. That's a great way to put it, because Microsoft pushed the financial burden until the system broke. But if you look at Roblox, they are currently executing a massive pivot to shift an entirely different kind of burden.
The legal liability.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they are using some incredibly aggressive biometric technology to do it.
Yeah, starting tomorrow, April 15th, Roblox is enforcing a strict security mandate.
And this affects kids, right?
Yes, any user under 13 years old must pass either facial recognition or provide government ID verification just to access the platform's chat features.
I dug into the tech behind this, and they are partnering with a London-based firm called Yoti.
Right, Yoti.
If a kid chooses the facial recognition route, they record a 5-second selfie video. Yoti's AI then estimates their age, and Roblox claims no images are stored. The system just spits out a yes or no and deletes the biometric data instantly.
Instantly.
Yeah. And the alternative is uploading a government ID for manual review, which takes up to 48 hours.
To understand the mechanism here, you have to look at how Yoti's AI actually functions, because it isn't facial recognition in the traditional sense.
How so?
Well, it doesn't match a face to a database of known identities. It uses facial landmark analysis. It's calculating the pixel distances between features, analyzing skin texture gradients, and comparing that topography against a massive data set of faces categorized by age.
Okay, so it's age estimation, not identity confirmation.
Exactly.
But let's do the math on that estimation, because this is where it gets really interesting. Roblox is heavily touting a 98.5% accuracy rate.
Which looks fantastic on a billboard.
Right, but let's actually run the numbers. Roblox has 380 million active users. A 1.5% error rate means potentially 5.7 million users are going to be misclassified.
That is a staggering number.
We are talking about nearly 6 million kids either getting locked out of their accounts unjustly or 6 million older users sneaking past the age gates.
The margin of error is substantial, I agree. But Roblox's primary concern right now isn't a flawless user experience. It's existential survival.
Because of the lawsuits.
Exactly. In 2025 alone, they faced over 50 lawsuits regarding child safety, alongside this intense pressure from the FTC and the European Union.
So what happens to those unverified kids, or the ones who fall into that 1.5% error rate? I mean, they get hit with massive friction. Unverified accounts can only chat with friends who have been manually individually approved by a parent clicking an external link.
That sounds annoying.
It's incredibly annoying.
Yeah.
If Roblox is making the basic social experience this intentionally frustrating, they aren't fixing the safety issue, they're just offshoring the liability to the parents.
But that is the exact strategy. The friction is the intended feature. By making the unverified experience incredibly restrictive, Roblox is effectively stating to regulators, hey, we have provided the tools. If a child interacts with a bad actor now, the liability rests on the parent who bypassed our verification system.
Wow.
Yeah. They expect abuse reports to drop from 15,000 a day down to just 3,500. And if this actually works, like if it successfully shields Roblox from further FTC fines, every other platform is going to follow suit.
Without a doubt.
Fortnite, Minecraft, TikTok. I mean, the era of the anonymous digital child is basically ending tomorrow.
It demands an incredible amount of trust from the consumer, though. You are asking millions of people to point a high-resolution camera at their face and trust the software architecture behind it.
Yeah, trust that it actually deletes the data.
Right. But the ability to run that kind of software seamlessly relies entirely on the hardware in the user's hand. And right now, the hardware market is fractured into two entirely different philosophies of what consumers actually want.
Let's break down that divide, because the Q1 2026 smartphone data is fascinating. On one side, you have the absolute dominance of the premium ecosystem. Apple remains the undisputed king of the market, sitting at a 21% global share.
That's up 2% from last year, right?
Yeah, up 2%. And that growth is being driven almost entirely by their most expensive device, the iPhone 17 Pro Max.
Which is powered by the A18 Bionic chip and features that new advanced periscope camera architecture. Apple's dominance here isn't just about the raw hardware specs, though. It's a masterclass in supply chain logistics and ecosystem lock-in.
Exactly. Meanwhile, Samsung has slipped to number two, dropping 6% to a 19% share.
Ouch.
Yeah, primarily because they suffered supply chain delays with the Galaxy S26 and got hit hard by broader industry memory shortages.
So Apple is winning the premium tier by guaranteeing this seamless, frictionless experience.
Right. But then you look at what Oppo is doing with their new Asus Pro. They aren't trying to trap you in an ecosystem. They are looking at the single greatest anxiety of modern technology, which is a dying battery, and solving it with sheer brute force engineering.
The specifications on the Oppo A6s Pro are just staggering.
I mean, they packed a 7,000 milliamp hour battery into this phone.
That is massive.
It's a brick. They are promising 3 full days of battery life on a single charge, and they are pricing it around $300. Think about the last time your phone hit 1% while you were trying to pull up a boarding pass at an airport. Oppo is betting $300 that you care more about eliminating that specific panic than you do about having a blue bubble in your text messages.
It's an incredible value proposition, especially when you look at how they engineered the charging mechanism. They're using 80-watt super VOOC charging.
Okay, what does that actually mean for the user?
It means it takes that massive 7,000 milliamp battery from zero to full in exactly 58 minutes.
Wait. If you pump 80 watts of power into a $300 phone that fast, shouldn't it overheat and just, you know, melt the internal components?
In a traditional architecture, yes, absolutely.
Nah.
But the Super VOOC mechanism bypasses that by using a dual-cell battery design.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't shoving 80 watts down a single pipe. It's pumping 40 watts into two separate battery cells simultaneously.
Oh, that makes sense.
Furthermore, Oppo moved the primary heat-generating circuitry out of the phone's chassis and into the charging brick itself. So the phone stays cool, the battery degrades slower, and the user gets 3 days of uninterrupted use.
And they still managed to throw in a 50-megapixel selfie camera just for good measure.
Naturally.
It's a fascinating psychological battle. Do you pay $1,200 for the refined, integrated Apple experience, or do you pay $300 for absolute, untethered endurance?
And what's remarkable is that this exact philosophical battle, you know, premium processing power versus multi-day endurance, is no longer limited to the smartphone market. We are seeing this exact dynamic collide in the PC space right now.
Oh, yeah. Asus just fired a massive shot across the bow in the Indian tech market today. They opened pre-orders for their entirely new ZenBook and VivoBook laptop lineups with official sales starting on April 21.
And they are doing something truly unprecedented here.
Yeah, they aren't forcing the buyer into a single processor paradigm.
Right, they are offering a choice of architecture within the exact same laptop chassis. You can configure these new machines with the traditional Intel Core Ultra Series 3 if you want raw, heavy lifting power. Or you can choose the new Qualcomm Snapdragon X2 Elite.
The Snapdragon X2 Elite is the side of the equation I want to focus on because the numbers are just absurd. We are talking about up to 28 hours of battery life on a laptop.
28 hours. It's almost hard to believe.
How is that even possible?
Well, the mechanism behind that 28-hour battery life comes down to the fundamental difference between Intel's x86 architecture and Qualcomm's ARM architecture.
Mm-hmm. Okay, break that down for me.
Sure. Intel's x86 chips use complex instruction sets. They're designed to throw raw voltage at heavy, complex tasks. That's great for high-end video rendering, but terrible for battery life when you're just, you know, browsing the web or typing a document.
Right, it's overkill.
Exactly. ARM architecture, which the Snapdragon uses, executes simpler, reduced instruction sets. It delegates background tasks with incredible efficiency, sipping power instead of gulping it.
And it's not just battery life. The Snapdragon X2 Elite features a 75 TOPS NPU plus built-in 5G.
Yes.
Let's not gloss over that NPU number. TOPS stands for trillions of operations per second. The threshold for Microsoft's Copilot Plus PCs last year was 40 TOPS. Hitting 75 TOPS changes the entire landscape of how we use software.
It fundamentally shifts where computing happens.
Yeah.
With an NPU that powerful, you no longer need to round-trip your data to a cloud server to process artificial intelligence tasks.
You can just do it locally.
Exactly. You can run massive 13 billion parameter language models locally, entirely on the motherboard. That means zero latency. And more importantly, absolute privacy, because your data never leaves the machine.
Which brings us to the crown jewel of this Asus launch, the ZenBook Duo. It features two 14-inch 2.8K OLED screens.
Oh, the dual screens are beautiful.
Yeah, there is no physical keyboard built into the bottom half, just a second high-resolution screen. It's sitting at roughly $3,600 or 2,099,990 rupees.
It is a stunning piece of hardware, clearly aimed at that premium high-spend tier.
But the hardware only matters if there is software capable of pushing it to its limits.
That is always the catch.
And that is why the news from Capcom today is the perfect capstone to all of this. We finally have an update on their sci-fi game, Pragmata.
This is a title the industry has been tracking for 6 years.
Yeah, it was first announced back in 2020. It's built entirely on Unreal Engine 5. It follows an astronaut named Hugh and an android named Diana fighting a hostile AI called IDUS on a lunar station.
And the visuals we've seen so far are incredible.
Right. The physics simulations and lighting systems they've shown off are just incredibly demanding on hardware. It was scheduled for a late April release, but Capcom just announced it is dropping on April 17.
Which is a week early.
A week early. In the gaming industry, that is unheard of.
In the software development world, delays are the absolute rule. Teams will routinely push a release back by months or even years just to polish bugs, optimize frame rates, or simply avoid a crowded release window. Releasing a massive AAA game a week early is an immense flex of confidence.
It's the developer equivalent of, like, calling your shot. They are saying, the code is flawless, the optimization is perfect, we literally cannot wait for you to play this.
It goes beyond just a flex, though. If you look at the deployment strategy, Capcom is releasing Pragmata simultaneously across PC, the PlayStation 5, the Xbox Series X and S, and the newly released Nintendo Switch 2.
Which is an engineering marvel in itself. Getting Unreal Engine 5 to run natively on the handheld architecture of the Switch 2, while simultaneously scaling up to leverage the massive GPU power of a high-end PC or a PS5, I mean, that requires incredible flexibility in the code.
They're utilizing the Nanite geometry system within Unreal Engine 5 to dynamically scale the visual fidelity based on the hardware it detects.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that deployment strategy perfectly mirrors what we're seeing from Asus with their laptop lines and Oppo with their phones. The tech industry is finally waking up to the fact that you cannot force consumers into a single box anymore.
You have to build flexible, powerful systems that meet the user exactly where they are. Whether they are playing on a massive OLED screen powered by an Intel chip or, you know, running local AI on a 28-hour battery Snapdragon laptop on a flight or holding a $300 Oppo phone that refuses to die, the power is shifting back to the consumer's preference.
The rigid mentality of dictating terms to the user is actively failing. Microsoft tried to dictate the price of game subscriptions and the market rejected it.
Exactly. When you look at all of these sources from today, the through line is that the industry is experiencing a rare moment of actual adaptation. Microsoft is retreating from unsustainable pricing. Hardware makers are engineering their way out of battery anxiety, and software developers are optimizing their code to run on whatever device you choose to pick up.
It's a landscape that is far more agile than it was even 2 years ago.
But I want to leave you with a thought that connects the more subtle threads of what we've discussed today. Look at the specific capabilities being normalized right now. We have Snapdragon processors capable of running massive artificial intelligence locally without ever needing to sleep or connect to a cloud server. We have companies like Oppo engineering devices with multi-day, almost week-long lifespans. And crucially, we have platforms like Roblox actively normalizing the idea that you must stare into a high-resolution camera and have your facial landmarks biometrically scanned and analyzed just to participate in a digital space.
The convergence of endurance, localized processing, and biometric security.
Right. So the question we have to ask you, the listener, to mull over is this. Are we rapidly building an ecosystem where our devices are completely autonomous, where they literally never turn off, and where they constantly, invariably know exactly who is looking at the screen?
That is a chilling thought.
We are gaining incredible convenience, battery life, and security. But what happens to the very concept of digital anonymity when your device never sleeps and its primary security feature is your face?
We are trading the ability to be invisible for the promise of endurance and safety. It's a profound shift in how we interact with the hardware we carry every day.
It really is the ultimate tension of this new era of tech. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the mechanisms behind the technology in your hands, and we can't wait to have you join us for the next exploration into the sources shaping our world. Take care.